Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Tom, you know what today is. It's February 2nd, 2022. Yeah, that. But today is also Groundhog's Day.
I heard about that.
Yeah, that tradition goes all the way back to Europe. It was something called Candlemas, where Christians would take candles to a church to have them blessed. Not exactly sure where the Groundhog Day fits into all of that.
Somehow a groundhog must have entered the picture.
Somehow. Punxsutawney Phil, all of that. Punxsutawney Phil living in the community in western Pennsylvania, of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and for the 136th year, this tradition has been going on. It looks like Phil did see his shadow. That means we're in for six more, well, maybe back east they're in for six more weeks of winter. I doubt that will be the case here. We'll have to ask our climate specialist, Dr. Zach Guido, at 12:30 about that. But anyway, it's Buckmaster now in the 12th year right here on the radio. Our program broadcasts from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 10:30. KVOI, The Voice, for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening. That means if you're anywhere near a computer, anywhere in the world, you can put in buckmastershow.com, and you will hear the program live with a live stream, and you will also see our complete archive going back 11 full years. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we do our Mexico Border Report, hosted by longtime border reporter Keith Rosenblum. Keith, how is the new year going for you so far?
You know, it's been a month of assimilation of a weird Mexican president, and thinking that every time that he's something new, that I have the same sensation that I did when I was listening to Donald Trump. I have the sense of a guy who is enormously popular with a large swath of the population, but he says things that I just haven't heard. I haven't heard the words ever put together in Spanish the way that he does it. And for 2 hours every day, and you and I have been down this path, I've been preaching to people that they ought to go to YouTube and listen to. Just put in AMLO, which are his initials, A-M-L-O, and put in today's date. And starting at 6:30 our time, 7:30 Mexico City time from Palacio Nacional, you can listen to the president of Mexico pontificate on almost any topic of the day. And it reminds me, even though I never watched it, it reminds me of the references to Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, who on Sundays had a 7-hour variety show in which he sang.
What?
And they had leaders. This was Chavez. This is not Lopez Obrador, but he's not far from that. This is a guy who has 65-70% popularity now in year four of a 6-year term. And he continues to, the parties themselves are way below. Morena Party, from which he comes, the PRI, the PAN, the other parties, no one enjoys a rating that's above 50%. I think they're all in the 30s or maybe 40. But the man himself, and I think what it points to is it points to Mexicans are so happy to have somebody that they trust, even if he's crazy. The best way that I can describe it, they trust him. The man still goes to work. He talks about his have a Caribe, a Volkswagen, a very modest Volkswagen when he was
is that the presidential limousine? The presidential limousine is a Volkswagen.
Today he's explaining today Shaila Rosagel, who's the reporter for Imparcial. Imparcial is the daily paper in Hermosillo, and they also own a paper in Tijuana, Mexicali, and very well known. And she asked him, hey, you know, when are you going to come to Sonora? Because there's a lot of pending things in the state of Sonora. Sonora, for your listeners, is one of the 32 states, and it's opposite Arizona. So everything from when you go to Rocky Point, that's to Peñasco, Sonora, then there's Sasebe, then there's Douglas, then there's Alpieta. Sonora is a huge state, and the president told people what his plans were for going to Hermosillo, to the Yaqui tribe to Yecora, which is in the hills of Sonora with Chihuahua. And he says, and this was fascinating because they're saying to him, well, what is your, you know, where are you going to go first? And this is the presidential response, which even I love. The response is, well, there are no commercial flights into Obregon at the hour that we need to be there, so we're going to go into Hermosillo instead. In other words, his entire entourage was going to base its plans on when there was either an Aeromexico or a Volaris or a
the schedule.
Vivido Boost flight. That's
he
how
goes
they do.
Commercial.
This,
there you go.
This is juxtaposed. Yeah. Right now, people have to understand there's a $200 million 787 reconditioned, beautiful luxury liner in Mexico City that was bought by the, I think, Peña Nieto government, which preceded, you know, López Obrador. And it's an example of kind of the ostentatious Mexico of the past. And so they haven't been able to sell it because of the configuration. Mexico has had this aircraft. First, it was in Victorville, I think, California, being stored. Then they took it to Mexico City. So the plane, it was used to actually take an Olympic. It was used to go to Japan, I think, a year ago or something. But anyway, this is the man that they elected president. And it's understandable to me, even if the guy is halfway crazy, he's kind of a dimwit. But he loves baseball. He talks people's language, and he really is an everyday guy. Even if, in my case, he's an everyday guy that I think is a little bit off the wall.
Hey, Keith, the State Department's at it again. They have added Mexico to the list of, I guess, just about every country in the world that the State Department and the CDC recommends not visiting because of COVID.
I have such fatigue on this topic, Bill, having had it twice, having traveled the country. There's no difference. It's hard for me to distinguish by nations because I go all the time. I was in Mexico City last month and then Puebla and then where else? León. And I'm going to Nogales tomorrow. I was there the day before yesterday. And so somehow this notion, I mean, to me, when what the State Department does there is no different. I don't think of going to Mexico as I do. I'm in Tucson right now, but if you ask me, am I going to go to Sierra Vista or to Douglas or to Chandler, I don't think twice about Mexico. Mexico is every bit as rigorous when it comes to applying the vaccines. The only issue that the Mexicans have when it comes to the vaccines is that a couple of them that they gave to people are not on our list of proper vaccines.
The
Moderna the Pfizer Pfizer or the other one, I don't know what it is, then you can't come into the U.S. right now. But it's a minority of them, but there's one that was from Argentina, one that was from Russia or China.
One from China. So
anyway, State Department warnings aside, I mean, State Department's always warning us not to go to high-intensity drug trafficking areas. The State Department, I think it was like being a benevolent grandma, just always telling us, you know, don't do that, Keith. You know, you might get hurt. So I don't even pay attention to it anyway. And half of their warnings are more designed for their diplomatic corps anyway and not for ordinary people.
All right, Keith, we're coming up on the break. Maybe I should take the break a little early because I do want to talk about the number of journalists now that have been killed just in the last month.
Let's
talk about that after the break. But right now I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's home to a wide variety of lovely and tasty European-style breads and pastries. They open Tuesday through Sunday, 6:30 for breakfast. And if you're up there on a Sunday morning, chances are you'll run into me. And my lovely wife. We try to dine up there at Mona's once a week, and their breakfast is wonderful. Their website also looks really nice with all the beautiful pictures of everything on the menu. It's monasdanishbakery.com. Check it out. You will find out what everybody's excited about. People actually wait in line for them to open at 6:30 in the morning at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Be right back with Keith Rosenblum. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We continue now with our monthly Mexico border report hosted by Keith Rosenblum. The unprecedented spat, Keith, of four journalists killed just in the past month has put reporters on edge across Mexico. The government is saying that over 50 journalists have been killed in Mexico since December 18th. Your thoughts?
I know some. I don't know any of these, but I did know. The reporter from Imparcial here many years ago. They're kind of. One has to understand journalism in Mexico first to know that sometimes this will be. I'm going to say the third of the cases. Sometimes you have a journalism that is a kind of a slanted or tabloid or extortionist journalism. There's a kind of a theory people say that when it comes to Mexico, and the same thing could sometimes be applied to the U.S., but more to Mexico, and that is what's important is not what's published, but actually what is not published. So if you work for yourself or you work for a medium, it's quite possible that you come across some information and then you go and you say to people, you know, it'd be really inconvenient if this came out.
Oh.
So before we talk about crusading journalists, it's important to specify that there's a part of that. And as I said, I chose a third out of the blue. But they're journalists who make a living through extortion. And the laws of unpublication, laws of libel and defamation are much laxer, sometimes not existent in Mexico. And so there are settling of scores that take place. That's not to justify anything. I mean, to address the clear cases where there's reporting going on and there's appeals are not to be messed with in this area. And it's important to know that at the municipal level, the state level, and the federal level, that there are compacts. There's understandings that take place that so-and-so, that Keith and his family, get that territory. There's understandings that the Buckmasters, who are old line, you know, traffickers, get that territory. And it's a way of life. And I don't think it's a way of life that varied much from the mafias, the control, the protection type of things that were sold in the U.S. as well. And in fact, go on today, but on to a much, much lesser degree than in Mexico. So the interesting thing is that a lot of the spats in Mexico are because you have poor law enforcement techniques. You don't have a system that is solid. You still have the case of Manuel Buendia, who was one of the most distinguished journalists. He was kind of like a Jack Anderson of his day.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s or early 80s, who was shot to death right outside, I think it was when he was a solid newspaper in Mexico City. And I believe the case is still unsolved, you know, as are there many of their political assassinations. So when you have law enforcement that's lax, number one, you can get away with things. So there's lots of lines that reporters, and I know them, you just don't cross. And so, you know, they're horrible. And what you're saying is accurate. And so I'm not going to say for a second these are all or even the majority are extortionists or blackmailing journalists. But you do have to look that there's a lot of publications that are kind of shaky. It would be as if, I don't know about TMZ, but I'll talk about websites in the U.S. that are kind of a little bit off base or, you know, not to be trusted and are known for not caring about libel or defamation laws. What can you do? Mexico has a long way to go. Even when there's public indignation at these shootings, I remember very well, by the way, let me backtrack. I remember very well Lourdes. What's her last name? Alvarado, I can't remember, or Alvarez, the woman who was just shot to death in Tijuana the other day. I remember her because I watched her talk to President Lopez Obrador and express fear for her life 2 years ago. Mm. I mean, this is how, and then she shot to death.
Wow.
In a world where, you know, if this was Britain, if Mexico was Britain, there's cameras everywhere, and
yes,
people would be able to trace these kind of things. Mexico still has, and Mexico horse is a huge territory. So that's why these wells and places where there's mass assassinations that take place can still be with impunity. It's one of those areas, you know, it's one reason, and I'm going to take a step into Keith's own cowardice, and, you know, Keith wanted to be a family person either in Mexico or in the U.S. I chose not to attack those really nasty, grimy stories. I decided that the world of narcotics trafficking, which is most of where these shootings, you know, from which they emanate, I decided that I don't care enough about it. My view on drugs has always been legalized and taxed anyway. And so the idea that as a reporter I would cover that as a beat, I just didn't want to at all. So I bowed out of it. But it's a horrible stain on Mexico. It's a horrible stain on the world. And a lot of them are good people who want to move the society toward a more democratic model with freedom of information that flows. And I grieve for those people and for the media that do want to make a difference.
All right, still on our Mexico border report, and this is really important, I think, the money that Mexican migrants send home to their relatives grew by nearly 30% last year. This number is just off the charts, Keith Rosenblum. It totals over $51 billion for a year as a whole. That's $51 billion.
I go to Western Union, I go to MoneyGram, and I go to Nogales, to the currency exchange places, and I live what you're describing. And there's you know, Mexico probably had the family unit is so tight, and the differential in wages, we've been down this path before, is probably 4-1. Bill Buckmaster, your equivalent in Veracruz or somewhere in Sinaloa, for your same work for today is going to earn about a fourth of what you earn, okay?
Yeah.
So the Bill Buckmasters of Mexico would, with family up here, would be sent, you know, from some of their well-to-do, better-off relatives here. It's just commonplace to send money back to mom and dad and to family. And if you go into a lot of the Mexican agrarian areas, you know, the countryside, you have entire towns where it's elderly people and kids and almost nobody in between. Everybody who's between 20 and 40 has left to work in the U.S. And you go to places like Chandler, you come to Tucson, more, but Tucson lesser. You go to places in Oregon or Washington, and there's entire transplantations of communities from Mexico. So if you go to certain parts of Fresno, there's an entire community from the state of Nayarit. If you go to Chicago, there's a huge, you'll go to O'Hare Airport or to Midway, there's nonstops, I believe, to Morelia, Michoacan, because you have such a huge community of people from there. They knew somebody who knew somebody. The next thing you know, there's almost as if they were suburbs. It would be as if you were from Chicago and there was an enclave of people from Evanston and Northbrook and Wilmette in the middle of Jalisco.
Wow. But that is a lot of money being sent in, and that's got to be one of the top money earners or portions of the Mexico economy. That's what I'm trying to say.
Isn't that great? This is even weirder, Bill, but I went to send money to Mexico 2 weeks ago. I sent $400 to Hermosillo, and all of a sudden, instead of paying $8, I paid $1 to Western Union. And I'm trying to figure out, maybe there's some kind of price war going on, because it's always been $7 or $8. You can go Walmart to Walmart or Walmart to any Western Union place in Mexico. But the just so that your consumer tip of the day for the Buckmaster show is that what you're being charged for the fee of actually sending it is one part of the equation. But the next thing to look at very carefully, what's my peso rate for the day? So you can actually end up with one company charging you saying, oh, your dollar's worth 19.5 pesos, and another company giving you 18.6. That's where they can make their money.
Are you saying that the charge, though, it was normally $8, was $1?
Yeah, I went to $1 for that day for Western Union. I was happy.
A sale.
but I don't know if that's because there was something competitive. Maybe the woman behind the counter made some kind of error. But what I am saying is that don't think that you're getting a great deal because there's no charge. Let's say you find a place that there's no charge. You can actually go onto your computer right now and send money from a Zoom, X-O-O-M account that you set up with your bank, and it'll send it to somebody in Mexico, and there's no charge for it. But be wary of what the person is going to, the dollar that you send here. With one company, that person will be picking up 19.8 pesos in Culiacan. And with another company, they might be picking up 18.7 pesos to the dollar. So that's where to take a look at, not merely the fee for sending it, but also what the exchange rate they're giving you is.
And I do want to point out that despite the COVID pandemic, that migrant money being sent to Mexico surpasses, Keith, almost all other sources of Mexico's foreign income.
Isn't that great? What a testament to the Mexican family, and to also sometimes it's to set up, not just to keep people, you know, to keep food on their plates or to build a house, but it's because they're planning for their returns. Most people who immigrate to the U.S. do not see this as being their end all. You come up here, you make enough money, and you can go back, and on $30,000 a year, you can be king in almost anywhere in Mexico. So if you put in some time here, go build your house somewhere in, well, anywhere in the country, really, and boy, can you live well and, in fact, start your own business from what you've earned in the United States. But back to what you say about the quantities, they're huge, and I only... action of what Mexicans send to their families.
All right, Keith, we lost you there a little bit, but I think we're back. But
I was expressing envy and hoping that my children will one day send me money the way the Mexicans send back home to their families.
All right. Keith Rosenblum, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to talking to you in early March with your Mexico border report. Thank you, Keith.
You.
All right.
You bet.
All right, the Buckmaster Show ready with our mid-show break on this Groundhog's Day. And what would be more appropriate on Groundhog's Day than to talk about climate and weather? Dr. Zach Guido is waiting in the wings. He will be joining us. He is our contributor on climate. He is a UA climate scientist. He'll be right up after we take the break in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Midweek edition of Buckmaster continues after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on a midweek edition on this Groundhog's Day. This portion of our program, of course, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We love green things, 3384 East River Road. Remember to cover your sensitive garden plants tonight, going down to about 27 in the Tucson metropolitan area. They have all those particular covers that you could that are recommended by gardeners. Those are available over at Green Things. You could stop by, pick up some. 13-acre site, beautiful place, home to Zocalo and that great merchandise from Mexico, all that Talavera pottery, beautiful items at Zocalo Village, which is the sister business to Green Things. Green Things, in their 51st year, they are open daily, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Zach Guido is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Zach is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institutes for Resilience, acronym AIR. Arizona Institutes for Resilience, known for, as I say, AIR, coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water, resources, and beyond. Zach, how are you? How is your New Year's so far, this first month or so?
I'm doing well, and thanks for having me again. Always happy to talk climate. It's been, I'd say it's been a pretty good start to 2022. I'm pretty optimistic.
And of course, it's very appropriate to bring in someone who wants to talk about weather and climate on Groundhog's Day. And I know that's one of your favorite movies that came out in 1993.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because every year we have to talk again and again about El Nino and La Nina. So it does feel a little bit like Groundhog's Day come this time of year. So.
Well, Punxsutawney Phil back in western Pennsylvania, he did see his shadow, and they've been kind of doing this, going round and round on this for 136 years, kind of a fun tradition, I guess, six more weeks of winter. Phil has gotten it right only about 40% of the time over
they've
the past.
Actually done that.
Yeah,
huh?
They really have. He's gotten it right at 40%
of the time. I was wondering as you were talking.
So you could throw a dart at it, you know.
So should we then bet that it's going to be, you know, a nearer summer?
Yeah, warmer. Warmer and spring coming, if we bet the other way, 60% yep. odds that Phil is wrong. It is, and I hadn't really thought about this, but kind of the reason that we have Groundhog's Day today is this is the astronomical winter, Zach, winter solstice and the spring equinox. This is the halfway point, so it's very appropriate to bring you on the program to kind of talk a little bit about where we are in terms of precipitation. I thought, at least for California and the West, well, I think up in the Northwest, they've done a little better than California in January, but the last time you were on the show, the Sierra, they had some record snows up at Tahoe and things. January's was bone dry.
Yeah, I think it's been kind of a tale of a couple different periods in this winter. Like we started here in the Southwest, November, October and November were dry, and then like you mentioned, December was a pretty good month, in part fueled by these atmospheric rivers that obviously entered through the West Coast and California, but also, you know, provided quite a bit of moisture for Arizona and also the interior Rockies, and really helped boost up the snowpack there. And in, you know, that flipped again, that pattern flipped to dry, you know, in January. And I think we had like one small little event here in Tucson that just a small amount
pretty
of,
much trace of rain,
yeah at the airport. And you know, we've got another something going on today, like this weak low pressure cutoff low that's sort of wafting about, bringing a little bit cooler conditions and a little bit of moisture. But yeah, if we didn't have December, it would be much bleaker than I think it is now. And you know, Tucson's, you know, below average, Phoenix is below average, Flagstaff's close to average. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag in Arizona. You know, if you go up to like Albuquerque, it's below average, and Las Cruces area, it's below average too. But they're not extremely low values. So, you know, last winter, we're already ahead of the total for last winter here in Tucson. So I think that's maybe the glass half full kind of look. The other thing that's going on, and that's actually playing out right now, and you know, I'm paying particular attention because we usually take a trip somewhere in the West at about this time to go skiing, and I'm looking for where the most snow is happening. And there's this big high pressure ridge that is pretty canonical or characteristic of a La Nina pattern, which we're in, that is really sort of driving most of the weather a little bit to our east. And so the West is not experiencing much precipitation. Now, I should say that the yesterday or last night and today, Colorado, the San Juan Mountains are on sort of like the dip of the jet stream that is bringing quite a bit of snow there, but that'll be the last in probably a couple weeks. And
that kind of the energy that that's been moving and bringing that record snow to the Northeast, to Boston and New York? Are they getting a little bit of that?
So this is a different system.
Okay.
That one, what was it, last weekend?
Yeah. Another one supposedly coming this weekend.
Right. This one is like you get this big dip in the jet stream that kind of enters in through, let's say, northern Idaho and comes down over the Rockies and then sweeps. Maybe actually the sort of average position of the jet stream in the winter actually goes over Arizona, which is something that I hadn't really thought about or known until I looked it up in a paper. But so that jet stream kind of digs down into the south and then goes east and north, and on sort of as it's on that rising limb of it, it can collide with warmer air as it's moving in from the south to the north. And that jet stream to its north is bringing cold Arctic air. And so you get these collisions of these air masses, cold and warm, warm, moist air, cold, cold Arctic air that can really generate big, big snowfall. That's what's going on across the mid-Atlantic at the moment. Last week, it was a nor'easter.
Yes.
So you had this low pressure system that was sort of wafting up the coast, and winds around a low pressure system in the northern hemisphere circle counterclockwise, and so you get some of the winds coming off the ocean from the north westward. So mm-hmm. the direction of the winds is always named for where they're coming. So northeast, they're coming from the northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can move big amounts of rainfall and snow, in this case, into
record amount of snow in places like Boston. I think they had 30 inches.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think Boston, it wasn't their record for the month of January, but it was close. So
the Colorado River Basin, which we were keeping a very close eye on, since we have now gone into a tier one shortage on the Colorado River. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, so I did look last Friday at the stream flow forecast and the snowpack conditions, and mm-hmm. you know, the snowpack conditions aren't bad actually. They're quite good in the Upper Colorado River Basin. When you average out all of the basins that contribute to the Colorado, it's probably slightly above average. And of course, this event in the San Juan Mountains will contribute.
Which is the southern portion of Colorado.
That's right, yeah. Right. Which will contribute to it. Mm-hmm. We'll make some improvements.
Where do you ski in that area?
Telluride.
Ah.
Yeah.
Telluride
is a nice, really nice mountain. There's a cool uh-huh. mountain up in Silverton.
Uh huh.
Wolf Creek is not in the San Juans, but close. Mm-hmm. And also like Taos in New Mexico gets some of that. As well. So snowpack, pretty good. Different picture in Arizona. But let's just, 80% of the water comes from the northern basin. So those in Colorado and Utah. But when you look at the streamflow forecasts for the runoff period, which is like April through September, mm-hmm. they're all pretty bleak, much below average. And part of that is because the runoff that they're forecasting is a function at any particular time, is a function of the snow that's accumulated in the past, plus what the expectation is going forward. So as you get closer to the end of the winter, those forecasts become more accurate because most of the snow has already fallen in the past, mm-hmm. right? So we're sort of at a moderate level of uncertainty right now, better than it was a month ago, not as good as it will be in a month. And they're bleak now in part because they're picking up on a increased chance of drier than average conditions moving forward. I think they're in part picking up on a La Nina pattern, although the La Nina pattern, which statistically brings fairly good chances for below average conditions in Arizona, that sort of relationship falls apart as you move up into Colorado. So it's kind of on the hinge line there. So I'm not exactly sure what those forecasts are picking up, but
so you're saying the jury is still out on the Colorado River right now.
I am saying the jury is still out on the Colorado River. It's not a bad picture at the moment. Things can change. We still got quite a bit of time. Like the peak value of snow in the basins is April 1, so we've still got 2 months of mm-hmm. I forgot what month we're in.
February and March. I got 2 months.
2 months of of snowpack. So yeah, things can change for sure. The other point that I would make is, and this has come out in the literature, is that it's not a one-to-one relationship between snowpack conditions, let's say in percent of average, and streamflow conditions, let's say in percent of average. So it takes more snowpack to get an average streamflow than it used to in the past. So in other words, whereas in the past you might have needed 100% of average, 100% to give you 100% average stream flow. Now you need like 110% of snowpack. I'm sort of pulling those numbers a little bit out of my hat. I don't know what the exact relationship is.
Because of the warm weather, unusually warm.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And there's two things there. It's like sublimation, evaporation, I guess three things. Oh. And soils are drier to start the winter, and therefore more of that water, that melt water, is being held in the soils.
All right. When we come back with Dr. Zach Guido, a new study finds when it comes to measuring global warming, humidity, not just heat, matters in generating dangerous climate extremes. We'll talk about humidity, something that doesn't get a lot of publicity. Most of the attention has been on the temperatures. More with Zach after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC, so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico always makes a great getaway. Perhaps you are yearning just to get in the car and go someplace new. Silver City is only about a three-hour drive. I strongly suggest check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. I think you'll be very tempted by all the outdoor activities and the great places to stay over in that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Again, southwestnewmexico.org for information about your upcoming road trip over to Silver City. We continue now with our climate scientist, Zach Guido from the University of Arizona. Zach, I teased before the break this new study that when it comes to measuring global warming, humidity, not just heat, matters in generating dangerous climate extremes. And it's one of those things that, gee, why hasn't somebody done a study about this before? Because warm weather seems to kind of go with humidity in most places. Not here necessarily, but yeah.
Well, no, I think it's a good point. We all know that humidity affects the way that we feel and the heat that we experience. Like, we're all familiar with the heat index, right?
And right.
That heat index is, it's not just temperature, but it's also the amount of moisture in the air. So, you know, a 90 degree temperature day with 50% humidity feels like 95.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's 100%, if it's about ready to rain, it feels like it's over 130 degrees. So humidity matters. This paper was cool. It was in the Proceedings of National Academy of Sciences, which is, you know, a top tier journal, Chinese and American scholars, climate scientists. And I don't think it changes any of the thoughts. Like, obviously, we fixate in the climate science community on temperature because it's an easy metric.
Mm-hmm.
But their point, I think, is important, which is it's that there's a whole bunch of other changes that are going on with temperature, including humidity. And oh, by the way, humidity matters for human health. It matters in the paper. They make some relationships between that and like extreme heat waves and also extreme rainfall events. Yeah, I think it's worth noting that you know, as the world is warming, that one would expect by physical rules that the atmosphere can hold more moisture.
And so that high humidity, especially in the tropical zones, juices up the storm activity, not just the regular storms, but more intense, robust tropical monsoons, cyclones, hurricanes.
Right. So when you have warming increasing in temperatures, you get more evaporation, let's say, over the oceans, and that fills the air with more moisture. And so not only do you have more moisture in the air, but because the atmosphere is warmer, it can hold more moisture. And so when it rains, and this is a whole theory, not just theory, there's actual observations that this is playing out, but it's the theoretical basis for why one would expect in a warming world there to be increases in extreme precipitation events. You know, there's a very robust relationship between heat and atmospheric moisture. And then when the atmospheric conditions are ripe and, you know, maybe you get this air mass that's flowing over a mountain that causes the air to uplift to cooler conditions, if you have more moisture there, it's gonna all fall out.
So when it rains, it now really rains, it pours. And we had a little bit of that, in some cases, a lot of that here last July and August.
We did. Yeah, we had a lot of moisture.
Coming off the mountains.
We had a lot of moisture around. Yeah. I mean, that was the thing about the monsoon, the generational monsoon, as we've called it.
Yes.
For our part of the world, like, if you don't have any moisture around, you're not going to have a monsoon. Mm-hmm. If you have moisture around, you're more likely to have a more rigorous, robust monsoon than not. I don't think, like, in terms of this climate change framing, it's really hard to figure out if the moisture around, how much of it could be attributed to, let's say, a human-caused climate change effect. Like, there's a whole discipline set up to try to figure out the contribution that occurred by the global warming that versus what naturally would occurred. My feeling on the monsoon is it's just so variable. Like, it wasn't record set. It wasn't the historically wettest in a lot of places last year. It was close, mm-hmm. but it's happened in the past.
Yes, it has.
And so the high variability just makes it a little bit more difficult statistically to figure out the contributions of climate change. But this is where I always sort of go back to theory. We would expect with an atmosphere that can hold more moisture, that when there is moisture around, that more rain is going to happen.
All right, Zach, always interesting. And the next time we have you on the program, we'll be pushing into the spring, and we'll be maybe get a little handle. It's one of the most difficult things to predict, of course. Will we get I'd love to get close to even a repeat of last summer's rain.
Oh, yeah, can't wait.
I mean,
be hard to.
Yeah, I mean, we went from one of the driest summers ever to one of the wettest in 2 years. We'll see what 2022 will be doling out. Zach, thanks, and glad the new year is going well for you and yours.
Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido from the University of Arizona, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster urging all of our listeners, and a lot of them do tune in, not only to our program, but they stick around for Dave Ramsey, one of the most popular national talk shows now on the radio, and he's right here on KVOI from 1 to 4. Dave Ramsey talking about your money. That's coming up next. Have a great afternoon.